A decade ago, ethanol was touted as an eco-friendly biofuel that would not only decrease U.S. dependence on foreign oil, but also boost our Midwest economy. Today, ethanol's future is a matter of debate. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The Environmental Protection Agency recently proposed reducing the ethanol mandate for our nation's fuel supply. This hour, we'll hear why and listen to the arguments for and against that proposal and ask how Iowa's economy would fare if the biofuel standard were reduced. How good is ethanol for our state, for our nation, for our world? Join the conversation after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, these days we know that putting ethanol, an ethanol blend, into our gas tanks is commonplace. Actually, it's a fairly recent development. Remember a few years ago, before this huge ethanol boom, how it all started? It was in 2005 when Congress enacted the Renewable Fuel Standard Program. And then in 2007, it was expanded. The idea behind it was this. We wanted to reduce our country's dependence on foreign oil and cut greenhouse gas emissions by mixing biofuels with gasoline and diesel. Most of the renewable fuel produced since then has been corn ethanol. Since 2005, in fact, U.S. ethanol production has more than tripled. And since Iowa is the biggest U.S. producer of ethanol and corn, Iowa has been a huge winner ever since the implementation of this renewable fuel standard. But now the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, has proposed reducing the ethanol mandate for our nation's fuel supply. In just a few minutes, we'll hear arguments for and against the EPA proposal and ask how Iowa's economy would fare if the biofuel standard were reduced. But first, Grant Gerlach of Harvest Public Media gives us some more background about the proposed change, and he explains a very important concept in this controversy. It's called the blend wall.
A steady stream of semis rolls across the scales at the E-Energy ethanol plant near the town of Adams in southeast Nebraska. The smokestack behind the scale house sends up a tall plume of white steam, and the sweet smell of fermenting corn is in the air. E-Energy buys 65 million bushels of corn each day from area farmers and turns it into 65 million gallons of ethanol each year. E-Energy CEO Carl Sitzman.
There is plenty of supply, plenty of production capacity available.
Ethanol has become a mainstay of the rural economy, but in 2013, the industry ran into a wall, the blend wall. And in 2014, the EPA is proposing the industry take a step back. For Sitzman, many rural advocates, and farm state legislators, that's a step in the wrong direction.
This is not a wise decision on the part of the EPA to reduce a mandate that was established by Congress.
The blend wall is really just a number, 10%. Gasoline with 10% ethanol, called E10, has become the standard nationwide. Almost any car can run on it. Take that 10% across the fuel supply, and you have the blend wall, the amount of ethanol that fits in the fuel supply, right now about 13 billion gallons. But the Renewable Fuel Standard, or RFS, requires oil companies to sell over 14 billion gallons in 2014, and that's just for corn-based ethanol. Charlie Drevna represents the oil refining industry as head of the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers. He says there's no easy way for refiners to fill that gap.
Ethanol's a good product, but, you know, too much of a good thing, you know, is not good.
And when Congress passed the RFS in 2007, lawmakers made an assumption that turned out to be wrong. Drevna says back then, gas consumption was rising, and Congress thought that would continue.
Fast forward to 2009, when we hit the recession, there was a dramatic drop in the demand for gasoline.
That drop in demand brought on the blend wall earlier than first anticipated. The EPA is proposing a cut to the RFS to put it back on pace with gasoline demand. But Iowa State economist Bruce Babcock says cutting the mandate undermines how the law was meant to work.
If you use EPA's logic, we'll never move beyond the blend wall.
Because to get past the blend wall, you have to get past E10. You have to fill more flex fuel cars with higher ethanol blends like E85. But there's a problem. Only about 2% of gas stations in the U.S. actually offer E85, and they're concentrated in the Midwest. Babcock says the RFS is supposed to force oil companies to put in more pumps.
The RFS was designed to increase the consumption of biofuels at the expense of fossil gasoline. That's what the RFS is supposed to do.
Here's how. Once the mandate is larger than the blend wall, refiners have to buy credits from the government to comply with the law. As the price for credits goes up, the price for E85 comes down. And all of a sudden, E85 looks a lot more attractive to flex fuel drivers and gas retailers. Cutting the mandate, Babcock says, lets refiners off the hook and stalls expansion of E85, leaving little room for second-generation biofuels that have lower greenhouse emissions.
People who want to see technology develop to have a greener economy should care about this, because the EPA decision darkens the outlook for all those policy objectives.
Even if EPA backs off the mandate for 2014, Charlie Drevna of the fuel manufacturers says a growing coalition of interest groups wants Congress to rethink the law altogether.
It's just not the refining industry calling for significant reform or repeal of this act. It is a cross-section of business, industry, environmental groups who are saying it's time for Congress to take a long, hard look at this thing.
The EPA is studying the impact of the proposed cut to the ethanol mandate and may decide by mid-year. I'm Grant Gerlach, Harvest Public Media.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. And so we're talking about this proposal by the EPA that reduces the ethanol mandate for our nation's fuel supply. We'd like you to join our discussion. By the way, the decision from the EPA is expected later this year. Are you for or against the planned reduction in the RFS? How good is ethanol for our state, for our nation, for our world? And after years of ramping up production of corn ethanol under the RFS, what has been the impact in your part of Iowa? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org, our email. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining me, first of all, is Jay Lynch. Jay Lynch is a corn and soybean farmer for EJ Acres in Humboldt County. That's in the north central part of the state. Jay Lynch is past director of the Iowa Corn Growers Association. Jay, are you there?
Yes, I am. Pleasure to be on.
Great to have you on. Jay, we wanted your perspective as a corn and soybean farmer. You were listening to that piece by Grant Gerlach as well. You are against the reduction in the planned continued ramp up of renewable fuels in this country. Why?
The big reason, the Midwest has been a major winner in the RFS, renewable fuel standard, when it was put into place in 2007. The amount of infrastructure and demand that has been created has just blossomed here in the Midwest and allowed many people to go to work, have a good job, grow corn, be able to produce a fuel and also a feed additive that really has been a win-win for our economy and the environment.
Mm-hmm. So from your perspective as a farmer and seed seller, what would a reduction in the planned increase in the RFS mean for you, for your family financially? Let's get right down into that small unit there.
If we look at where the price of corn is today, for most people, I would go out on a limb here and say we are at the cost of production, meaning that whatever we put in to grow the crop, from the seed, the fertilizer, the tractor pulling the planter, the combine, all our labor, what we turn around and sell that for is right at our cost of production. If the EPA goes forward with a reduction, that will lower the demand for our products, therefore causing less demand, you lower the price, and we are going to be seeing a lot of red ink.
Mm-hmm.
On
what is corn running at today? What's the price you're seeing there today, Jay?
Today I'm seeing about $4.25.
$4.25. So that's down significantly. We were up closing in on $10. Right? $8 was the top end of that?
$8 was the top end.
Mm-hmm. So What are you talking about with other farmers who are doing similar work that you do? What are the concerns past this?
Well, we really think it sends a very bad message to the ethanol industry and to all the plants that have been up in operation. You know, all of a sudden you have this demand, you're expecting it, you grow for it, and then, nope, now we're going to back it off and shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
It's too hard to gauge for that, and so there'll be a lot of, you know, I think there'll be some plants that close. There'll be some farmers that will have a very tough time making ends meet.
Okay, we'll talk to an economist at ISU in just a moment, but do you understand, Jay, the argument that, well, due to the recession and conservation, energy needs for gas didn't grow as much as anticipated back when they put this plan forward in 2005, 2007. So the plan for the production of biofuels goes this thinking should be scaled back as well. Do you buy that?
I don't. As I listened, Bruce Babcock explained it, I thought just about as well as anybody. In order to move forward and go past the blend wall, we have to have an incentive out there to get there. And keeping the amount of gallons at 14.4 will start us moving in that direction to move past the blend wall to become energy independent.
Okay. Let me read finally, before I let you go, Jay, from an AP report on their investigation of the environmental impact of ethanol production. This is from their report. As farmers rush to find new places to plant corn, they wiped out millions of acres of conservation land, destroyed habitat, polluted water supplies. 5 million acres of land set aside for conservation, more than Yellowstone, the Everglades, Yosemite National Parks combined, have vanished on Obama's watch. That's in this AP report. Now, those of us who aren't farmers have to take in our information through the media and so forth. What do you think of a statement like that? Do you see that happening, the degradation of the land and the water quality?
No, because if we do degrade the land and the water quality, we live here. We have to drink the water, eat from the land. If we treat the land poorly, next year we're going to have a poor yield, poor crops. You got to continue to feed and nurture the soil and make sure it's there to produce for generations. I'm the sixth generation farmer on our farm. If my great-great-great-great-grandfather decided, well, let's just do this and don't worry about the environment, I wouldn't be doing that. The farm would be gone.
Okay.
I just don't...
You haven't noticed any degradation in our environment due to the ethanol boom?
There is always good actors and bad actors. You can point to the bad actors and say, yep, here's your reason why you shouldn't do this here. But were they going to do it anyways? More than likely, yes. In my area, you know, we're growing more corn on corn. But we had started to move to that direction even before 2005 because of a pest in the soybean plant called cyst nematodes that don't allow us to produce very high-yielding soybeans. We were already moving in that direction. It was just accelerated by the government moving forward with the RFS.
Okay. Jay Lynch, corn and soybean farmer from Humboldt County, thank you for joining us with your perspective.
Thank you.
Let's move now to Craig Cox. Craig Cox is a senior vice president for agriculture and natural resources at the Environmental Working Group. The Environmental Working Group headquarters in Washington, D.C., but Craig Cox is based at a Midwest office in Ames, and he joins us from our Ames studio. Craig, hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. You've been listening. You, in contrast to Jay Lynch, the farmer we just spoke with, are in favor of the reduction. Why?
Well, I think what's happening is we are putting unprecedented pressure on our land and water resources in response to these high commodity prices. And the corn ethanol mandate has been a big piece of that increased demand and boost in prices. And it's great, frankly, to see farmers making money, some of whom are making lots of money. But this is coming at a cost of our soil and water and wildlife habitat. You know, it doesn't have to be that way. If we were intensifying conservation in lockstep with production, we wouldn't be having this discussion, but that's just not happening, and there's alarm bells ringing all across the landscape.
Give me a little more sense of the impact that you see in terms of the environmental impact, the cost, as you put it. What is happening out there?
Well, we see three things happening. The most visible alarm bell that's ringing is this expansion of cropland into areas that had not previously been cropland. According to our research, about 1.5 million acres in Iowa has been converted to cropland between 2008 and 2011. Some 380,000 of those acres are highly erodible or fragile land, and another 48,000 acres are wetlands. And the USDA itself reported that just over 22,000 acres of land that had never been plowed before was brought into production in Iowa in just 1 year. So, you know, that's what the AP reported. That's the most visible alarm bell we're seeing.
So that happens, though, every time we get a boost in corn prices. You know, in the 70s, we had higher corn prices than you plant fence row to fence row. So that happens when the market demands more corn, right?
That's true. But two things about that. One, what are we doing to protect that soil and water and wildlife habitat as that expansion occurs, and how much of that expansion is really driven by public policy and not really the marketplace?
Mm-hmm. Isn't the intent of this RFS to make us more energy independent in the United States? The intent of Congress was to do that, and they have a progression of ever-increasing renewable fuels mixed in with our fossil fuels. Why should we go against that plan? Isn't that a good idea?
It's a good idea, but what the RFS is producing is not getting us there. I mean, what we've learned since the RFS was passed is that corn-based ethanol is simply not producing the benefits that the RFS was intended to produce. I mean, the National Research Council, the arm of the National Academy of Sciences, reported in 2011 that corn ethanol is actually worse than gasoline for protecting our climate. It's worse than gasoline in terms of effect on our soil, water, and wildlife habitat. It's not doing what it was intended to do. Mm-hmm. And we're not getting the so-called advanced biofuels. That was really the purpose of the renewable fuel standard in the first place.
So you're saying the vision, the expectation you had of this vision when it was launched nearly 10 years ago has not been met?
Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm. Could it be met in the future if you say we had stricter conservation guidelines and so forth? Would you be then for continued ramping up of the renewable fuels then?
Well, what we want to see is us to take a new direction. And if we want these advanced biofuels, the sort of biofuels that are being worked on right here at Iowa State University at the SEN-USA project, that promise to make a far greater contribution to climate protection and the environment than corn ethanol, then that's what we should go after. And okay, it doesn't appear that the RFS is getting us there.
Craig Cox, Senior Vice President for Agriculture and Natural Resources at the Environmental Working Group. By the way, Craig, before you go, in preparing for today's show, we reached out to the Iowa Environmental Council, also the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. Now, both organizations declined to take part in our discussion and referred us to your organization, the Environmental Working Group. Why do you think these Iowa-based organizations referred us to you, the Environmental Working Group, not speaking for themselves?
Well, there, you know, the environmental movement in Iowa has to work on a number of fronts, and there's just a division of labor among us in that community. And the EWG has spent a lot more time looking at the renewable fuel standard and its impacts on our environment than other organizations. So that's just part of our turf here in Iowa.
Okay. Craig Cox with the Environmental Working Group, thank you for joining us with your perspective.
You're more than welcome.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. If you've just joined us, for years, ethanol production, you've noticed it has been ramped up. And those are ramping up according to plans set forth in something called the Renewable Fuel Standard of 2007. You'll often hear it referred to as the RFS. But now the Environmental Protection Agency has proposed reducing that ethanol mandate for our nation's fuel supply. A decision on that proposal is expected later this year. We want to hear from you this hour. Are you for or against it? Do you think how good has ethanol been for our state, for our nation, for our world? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Let's go to Dave Swenson, who will join us for the rest of the hour. Dave has been on this show several times, associate scientist in economics at Iowa State University at our Ames studio. Hi, Dave. Welcome back.
Hello.
Perhaps you can take a step back and briefly explain why the EPA is considering this reduction to the RFS.
Sure. We originally were going to expect to produce 15 billion gallons of corn ethanol a year by 2015. And then we were going to make room for advanced biofuels like cellulosic ethanol to be added on top of that. Now, way back in 2007, there was great expectation that fuel demand would continue to rise. Contrary to that, though, we went through a great recession and a couple of things happened. First of all, the demand for fuel went down because of the recession. People drove less. Second of all, people, when they ultimately did replace their automobiles, consistently replaced them with higher mileage vehicles. And third, we're driving less. So what happened was that the nation's fuel supply ran up against the blend wall, or to put it a different way, our ability to produce ethanol grew so fast, we bumped up against that 10% national fuel supply relatively rapidly. And because we're at that 10% national fuel supply, that's the average amount of ethanol that yours and my automobiles will tolerate, they had to make some room for the advanced biofuels. And to make room for advanced biofuels in general, this is primarily cellulosic, they rolled back the demand for corn ethanol by 6.6% over the value that they were to produce in 2013. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we are right now. And really what's going on is they're making room for cellulosic ethanol, which is coming online pretty soon here in Iowa. But at not that great of levels, but it's coming online at the expense of corn ethanol. So that's really where the tension is right now with the RFS decision that's upcoming.
You mentioned, Dave, we're coming up on a break, but you mentioned the blend wall, and an email from Adam in Waterloo points to an interesting aspect of this, that the majority of the gas pumps at stations in the country are not rated for a blend of gasohol over 10%. He writes the pumps would not be covered by manufacturer's warranties. That checks out with my research as well. If the stations were required to pump over a 10% blend, which they need to do to get past this blend wall that was created. So there is an additional investment in infrastructure that would need to happen in terms of pumps all across the country to handle this if we were to go above 10%.
Well, that's true, but we also would want to be able to handle this by heavy utilization of E85. Now, we have more E85 pumps and E85 vehicles per capita here in the Midwest than anywhere else. And in Iowa, the consumption of E85 has actually been going down over the last 3 years.
Stay with us, Dave Swenson of Iowa State University, an economist, and we'll have some other guests joining us as well. We want to hear your perspective. After years of ramping up production of corn ethanol under this renewable fuels standard, what has been the impact in your part of Iowa? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. How good is ethanol for our state, for our nation, for our world? We'll hear some differing opinions on that in the second half hour. Perhaps we'll hear your opinion. 1-866-780-9100. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So glad to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The president facing low approval ratings, also a stagnant Congress to work with. Tomorrow on this program, Politics Day, and as the term lame duck increasingly creeps into the vocabulary that's being used to describe President Obama's future, we'll look at his efforts to carve out a legacy. Will the president's State of the Union address be an opportunity to press the reset button? We'll try to answer that question tomorrow. By the way, live coverage of the President's State of the Union address here on Iowa Public Radio this evening. We're talking about ethanol production here in Iowa. For years, ethanol production has been ramped up according to plans set forth in something called the Renewable Fuel Standard of 2005. It was then expanded in 2007. But now the EPA has proposed reducing that ethanol mandate for our nation's fuel supply. A decision on that proposal by the EPA is expected later this year. Still with us from the first half hour, Dave Swenson, Associate Scientist in Economics at Iowa State University. Dave, a lot of callers to get to. I want to ask our callers to stay with us. We'll try to get to as many as possible as we get into the hour here. But Dave, before we do progress in this conversation, I wanted to get to you for a big picture look at the impact of this proposed change by the EPA. We heard a farmer there saying ethanol plants would close. There would be really some problems for some corn farmers out there. What do you see?
Well, when I'm asked about this, I say the impacts are probably going to be not as much as folks think. And the reason is we're talking about a 6.6% reduction in corn ethanol production in Iowa. Or to state it differently, to go back to 2012 levels of production from the 2013 levels of production. If you didn't notice a great big boom in rural economies between 2012 and 2013 when we increased production, you're not going to notice a great loss. Nationally, the number of jobs associated with ethanol production are much less than the proponents often claim. They'll say as many as 400,000 jobs in the United States are linked to ethanol production. And in compiling those statistics, there many of the components are misleading. They claim that ethanol production is creating new corn farms, and then they multiply through all the numbers that way. So we get much lower numbers here in Iowa than might be projected by the proponents.
Dave, I don't know if you saw this. It's just out a press release from the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association. Mm-hmm. It's saying that the renewable fuels industry accounts for in 2013 accounted for $5.5 billion, or about 4% of Iowa's GDP, $4 billion of generated income for Iowa households. And then I guess nationwide, 62,000 jobs for the entire—
No, that's Iowa. That's Iowa.
That's Iowa, 62,000
jobs. Those numbers are indefensible. For one part of it, they claim the ethanol industry is creating corn farmers. And as a matter of fact, 37,700 of those jobs are actually corn farm or soybean farm related jobs. This is why when you compare what proponents produce versus what scientists and analysts will produce at state universities, you're going to get a big gap. In Iowa, we have about 1,700 jobs producing ethanol as of last year. And once we do the multiply through, when we think of all of the linkage to the rest of the economy, all of the purchases, except for the corn was already here. We didn't make new corn farmers. It works out to about 6,500 jobs in the state of Iowa. That's net new productivity and net new jobs associated with the RFS as it's currently written. With this rollback, we would count job losses perhaps in the dozens. That's it.
Okay, let's add to our conversation, along with Dave Swenson, Rick Schwark. He is president and CEO of Absolute Energy, LLC, located in St. Ansgar, Iowa, past president of the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association, and currently sitting on the board for both Growth Energy and the National Renewable Fuels Association. Rick Schwark, Absolute Energy is in the business of turning corn into ethanol, correct? Rick Schwark?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Right, thanks.
Thank
sorry
you.
Sorry for the difficulties. You
no
are
problem.
Against the reduction. You are in the business of turning corn, fermenting it into ethanol.
Along with distillers' grains and corn oil, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. What would you say would be the impact on your industry if the EPA changed the RFS? What would happen?
Well,
have to lay off workers?
It depends. You know, it will be at the fringes, you know, the lowest and least efficient plants with the lowest economics would be the first to be impacted and laid off. In our area and in Iowa, you know, we have some of the stronger economics, so we would probably be less impacted than maybe some of the destination plants across the country.
Okay, destination plants. What are those?
A destination plant is where you take the corn to the locale rather than the ethanol to the locale.
Mm-hmm. Rick, you've heard all the arguments for and against we've had up to this point in the program. Well, give us your pitch on why this should not be rolled back.
Well, you know, ethanol is cleaner, greener, and American-made. You know, I would encourage anyone who's looking at this to go out and check the peer-reviewed data. You'll get their information from good sources. Iowa State is a good resource. But also, you know, our national laboratories, the Department of Energy, the USDA, because there's a lot of myths and misinformation on both sides of the issues. So, you know, it's an important debate. So you need good factual information to base your decision on.
Okay, let's go add to our conversation also Francis Tickey. He is the owner and operator of an 80-cow certified organic dairy farm in near Fairfield. Francis Tickey, welcome back to our program.
Thank you.
I want to mention that you also served on the Iowa Environmental Protection Commission from 2003 to 2007, and people will remember that you were a candidate for the Iowa Secretary of Agriculture in 2010. Are you for or against this rollback?
Well, my concerns are twofold. One is that there's a lot of collateral environmental damage going on. For example, a simple statistic, for every gallon of ethanol produced from corn, we lose 2 gallons of soil to erosion. That seems pretty dramatic, and that's based upon USDA erosion data. Soil regenerates at a rate of about a quarter of a ton per acre per year. Our erosion rate for corn in Iowa is almost 6 tons per acre per year, 25 times the rate of soil regeneration. So this is not a sustainable path we're on here.
Mm-hmm. Does that happen? Is that tied specifically to corn produced for ethanol? It could be corn for produced for anything, isn't it? Just because of the
right.
High demand.
It could be corn for anything. But I think Craig Cox pointed out that a lot of land, marginal, fragile land, came into production when the ethanol demand came online. We've seen a tremendous increase of corn production and plowing up of wetlands and fragile grasslands, highly erodible lands.
Rick Schwark, answer that. What about these concerns? Wiping out millions of acres of conservation land, destroying habitat, polluting water supplies perhaps?
Well, I've been a big supporter of conservation efforts my entire life. Few families have done more than my family in conservation efforts. I'd be happy to compare that to anyone. Just within the past year, we've protected 4 miles of the Wapsipinicon River, converting that to conservation reserve. Mm-hmm. When you come up to my house, my driveway is lined with switchgrass on both sides. We put in 100 acres of food plots.
Okay, but the bigger picture, past your plot here, you will not deny that this huge demand for corn, driving prices up to around $8 a bushel, has put pressure on conservation lands and brought some of those lands back into production.
It's been the repeal of the CRP, and that was a farm bill program. That was not, you know, that was in advance of any of the, you know, real boom in ethanol. That decision was made to roll back the CRP acres.
Mm-hmm.
That was not, and, you know, corn is on down from $8 to just over $4. It's down 50% in price. Have you seen food costs or anything else go down other than the price of ethanol as this corn prices has retreated?
Okay. One other dimension of this, Francis Tickey, I wanted you to talk about livestock. We don't have a livestock farmer here. But what are the concerns? Because we have to look. This is a big stone being thrown in a pond, and we're trying to look at as many ripples as we can. What about livestock?
Well,
how is that affecting?
Well, I think we have to look at this as a zero-sum game. When corn ethanol demand goes up and corn prices go way up, livestock producers suffer from that. And actually, people aren't aware of it, but nationally, the livestock groups are opposed to the renewable fuel standard being so excessive. The Cattlemen's Association, the poultry, the pork producers. And so actually, 7 governors from states around the country that are agricultural states have said we need to repeal it, reduce this renewable fuel standards. And in Congress, we have over 180 congressmen who are in favor of revising this renewable fuel standard. So here in Iowa, corn is king. But, you know, if you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And so in some other places, they have other priorities.
Okay, let's get to our phones. We have a few minutes left, a little over 10 minutes left, and we do have a number of callers who want to chime in. I'll ask our callers, please get to the point, be brief, so that we can get in as many callers and opinions as possible. Ed in Robbins. Hi, Ed. Welcome to our program.
Hello, Ben. I would just ask you to ask Mr. Swenson if the FS did not exist, what would be the natural demand for ethanol as a fuel additive? Because it's my impression that it's only a federal law that forces ethanol on its own value into the fuel supply system. And additionally, the law was passed before the Dakotas became a new oil field, before Canada became a new oil field, and the situation about our energy independence has changed considerably since 2007.
We've got it, Ed, and I don't need to ask him because Dave is right here. He heard your question. Dave Swenson, what do you make of that?
Well, he actually answered it himself. First of all, the natural demand would have been much lower. It would have been somewhat quirky by state to state. Some states mandated it. Some states didn't. Some states had a higher affection for ethanol, like Minnesota, a lesser degree Iowa, a more degree South Dakota. He's also right that everything has changed with regard to our attitudes and or our reality of energy. Natural gas production has exploded in the United States. Shale gas production has exploded. Imports from the rest of the world have gone down annually for the last 4 years. And so I don't know where to go with this other than to say that he's correct. And were the consumer to choose, the consumer would probably choose much less ethanol in her gasoline tank.
Rick Schwark, do you agree with that?
I disagree. For most of the life of the RFS, the amount of ethanol purchased by the consumers was way over the mandated amount. You know, I expect that a price is going to be the main determining factor in consumers. And that's really what we want as an industry, is we want the consumer to be able to choose. We want them to be able to vote with their pocketbook at the pump. And that's what we're advocating, is more infrastructure development so that consumers can choose.
Okay, let's go back to our phones. Dwayne in Marshalltown. Thanks to Ed and Robbins. Let's move on to Dwayne in Marshalltown. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi. I have a little adopted son over in Uganda, and it's $500 a year until ethanol came on the market. And due to taking the food acres out of production and making it ethanol, the cost per capita for those people went up to $1,000 a month. The price of corn doubled in Africa. So if you think of the casualties of the rest of the world, and that's substantial. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, the long run future, the gases production is dropping, but it's not going to go back up because we have people going to hybrids, and then there's a couple companies called BYD and Tesla that have 100% electric cars.
Okay, this is some good technology on the way, Dwayne. I think we got the point. I want
That's
to throw that
yeah.
to our economist, Dave Swenson, first of all, because Dwayne is significantly widening this out to the, is ethanol, corn-based ethanol, good for the world? Anti-hunger advocates, I think, are for the reduction, aren't they? Because
yes, they are.
Because of the very point that Dwayne
sure.
was making.
When we talk about the rapid roll-up of ethanol demand, we also had a rapid increase in the demand for corn. When you have demand increase more rapidly than supply, you're going to get a price impact. That price impact, of course, is going to ripple through all of the users of the corn, whether it's feeders of corn or people that produce the finished products from corn or the United States food industry. Now, countries, though, whose diets depend on all kinds of grains in a more raw form are going to feel these impacts much less than we do in the United States because most of our food is processed. So there is a differential impact given the way and the nature in which we consume. But there has been, of course, because of the increase in demand, an increase in the price of corn due to the ethanol mm-hmm. mandates. That's just unarguable.
Are people outside of the United States benefiting from ethanol production?
Probably not to the degree that perhaps some people would think. If the environmental benefits are not as great as maybe people think, I'm having a lot of trouble figuring out how these extend significantly, actually, beyond the primary ethanol production area of the Midwest.
Dwayne, great point. Thank you very much. I want to say goodbye to the caller. Was that Rick?
Yes.
Okay,
like
Rick, yes, I wanted to let you in. Go ahead, sir. We expand it out to the world.
I think that's a great point. And, 70% of the world's poor are rural, agricultural based. You know, who are the world's poor? They're not making headlights for Honda or cell phones for Nokia. You know, they're digging a living out of the dirt somewhere. And just I encourage all the listeners to go just Google GDP Ethiopia. In 2004, 9 years ago, their GDP was $11 billion. Last year, their GDP was $43 billion. In Colombia, 2004, $111 billion. Last year, $369 billion. El Salvador, you know, you'll see a massive lift in incomes of the of these developing countries who are commodity-based, who are agricultural-based economies. Ag's not just doing well in Iowa. Ag's doing well in a lot of areas, other areas of the planet.
Running out of time, I want to get Francis Tickey back into that. Perhaps on that point, Francis?
Just a quick thing. In the U.S., the Congressional Budget Office said that ethanol prices, ethanol increased corn prices 15%. But as Dave pointed out, very important, in these underdeveloped countries, they eat these raw commodities. And when the prices go up, it has a tremendous effect on their cost of food.
Mm-hmm. Dave, do you want to jump in there?
No, that was exactly the point I was trying to make. I don't know that the examples that were just given are completely attributable to commodity prices. But what we do know is that people that are living on a subsistence basis will find that they're much more vulnerable to food price swings.
Okay, quickly back to the phone. Suzanne has been waiting in Grinnell. Hi, Suzanne. What are your concerns in this debate?
Well, first of all, this was to reduce the effect of global warming to decrease our reliance on fossil fuels. But ethanol, I would say, increases global warming because people know that trees are big absorptions of carbon. They're carbon sequestration, but they do not know that soil and organic matter in soil is a huge carbon sequestration mine. And in this erosion from the steep ground that's being farmed with the ethanol price spike for corn prices, and also through planting on the very marginal soils, that this organic matter is being lost, also with corn on corn. So we're losing the race of trying to decrease global warming from this. I also, the rise in price
quickly,
in farm
Suzanne,
ground
quickly.
Has not been talked about.
What would the rise of what?
Price in farm ground due to this has been crazy, and the effect it has on new farmers. And also ISU did a study of when corn goes to ethanol versus corn going to feed, that we actually lose jobs, not gain them. For every one job gained in the ethanol industry, we have lost 4 to 10 jobs if that corn had gone to feed in hog production, for instance.
Okay,
so I think those are some things they haven't talked about.
Yep. Suzanne, as I said, ethanol production, a big rock thrown in a pond. We're trying to get to as many ripples as possible. Land price is definitely a ripple that we haven't concentrated on this hour. We're running out of time. I want to get to each of our guests here as we come with less than the 3 minutes left here. I want to give each of you some equal time to conclude what you have to say about this. Let's start with Francis Tickey. Can you tell us where you are right now and how you think the EPA should rule here?
I think the EPA is right on target here. The sky is not falling for ethanol. But I think we have to look one thing we haven't considered, and that is that there is really very little net gain from ethanol. There's a whole lot of fossil fuels.
What do you mean by that, very little net gain?
Because there's so much fossil fuels required to grow the corn and to make the ethanol. Even the best estimates say 40% of the ethanol is fossil fuel. And it really is only about a 2.5% increase in our gasoline supply, if you calculated it out. And okay, we could get that increased by efficiency by 0.5 mile per gallon increase of our mileage of our cars across the country.
Rick Schwark, can I give you about 40 seconds to sum up what point you want to make here?
The future belongs to ethanol. It's cleaner, greener. All the automobile manufacturers know they need the octane. They know if they're going to meet the coming CAFE standards. They have to have higher compression, direct injection, turbocharged, boosted engines to make it happen. So the future is ours. It's just a lot of angst till we get there.
Okay. Dave Swenson, our economist from Iowa State University. What point do you want to leave in our minds, Dave?
Sure. The impacts are not as great as they've been touted. They're going to be minor here in Iowa. We have concerns. We have issues associated with farm profitability. All of those are related and not related to ethanol. We have great supplies. But I want to leave with this one thing. Ethanol, corn ethanol, is making room right now for cellulosic-based ethanol. Every million gallons of corn-based ethanol supports about 2 jobs in the Iowa economy. Every million gallons of cellulosic-based ethanol will support 3 to 4 times that many jobs. So the net gain from switching to advanced fuels is positive for the job picture.
So it's important to get to that next generation to switch to switchgrass, for instance. Dave Swenson.
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much, Dave Swenson, Associate Scientist in Economics at Iowa State University. Thank you to Rick Schwark, Chairman, President, and CEO of Absolute Energy, LLC in St. Ansgar, Iowa, and Francis Tickey, owner and operator of an 80-cow certified organic dairy farm in Fairfield. Thank you all for participating today. Certainly a debate that will continue, a debate with many different dimensions, and thanks to our listeners for joining in our conversation. We had help today from Jason Burns in Ames in Des Moines. John Pelpo helped us out. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. Make sure you tune in tomorrow. By the way, we have the President's State of the Union's address live tonight. Tomorrow we'll pick that apart on Politics Day. Facing low approval ratings and a stagnant Congress, what do we expect to hear from the president tonight? We'll pick it apart tomorrow on Politics Day. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.